Okay, service announcement number one is that I am not going to Vasikin tomorrow, but there are some that are planning a trip to perhaps pay a cab. Please speak with Yaron or Tani. Please speak only with Tani. Please speak only with Tani in order to... three boxes. Whatever she wants. Speak with Tani. Number two, those that have not taken care of their tefillah payment and are planning to do so, so please do so tonight. Number three, don't forget about Gary Brown's shear, meaning the list of people that were 40 shekel miraculously short. So please pay at some point tonight. Number three is Gary Brown's shear. Don't forget, he's giving a Chana L'Matan Torah shear right at 11:45 in just about 2 hours. Number four, the Hebrew names for Sidurim. Hopefully you know what this refers to. You get Sidurim. Surprise. Your last names have to be on here, and you also have to make sure that the names are correct. Some people have Vav, some people have silent ions and kufs and things like in my name. We have all surprises in our last name. So please make sure that you check this. Go over to your name and check it off to make sure that it can go and be finalized. Lastly, what? That's not my announcement. Second to lastly.
Hey, first watch out to Kiva Gulag.
That's the official dumping grounds. Lastly is a special and very warm welcome to Rabbi Gutfreund from Boston. A special welcome. Thank you. This hour. Ready. This very possibly might be the last sicha of the year. Emir Tashem, in the event that next week it does work out somehow. So I'll give another last sicha. I'll prepare that this might be the last one. And shkoch for a fantastic year, spending time with each other. It's sicha time. I don't know about for you, but for me, it's one of my favorites of the week. Parshas Bamidbar starts the beginning of the second month of the second year. Parshas Naso goes backwards to the first month of the second year. Let me make that really clear. The Jews leave Egypt, and a year later, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they build the Mishkan. They set up the Mishkan Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What happens the second month, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, 1 month after they set up the Mishkan, 1 month afterwards, what happens? There is a counting of Am Yisrael. Now that we set up the Mishkan, it's been dedicated, we understand everything, let's move on. Let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Let's count everybody up. Why are we counting everybody? For the army. We're going into the army. We're going to Eretz Yisrael. And then, there's a little change. The Bechorei Yisrael, the firstborn, seem to have let HaKadosh Baruch Hu down. They were supposed to save us. There was a tragedy that happened called Cheda Egel. And the firstborn, we saw, were the ones that died in Egypt. The firstborn of Am Yisrael, the leaders. The firstborn that they no longer have, that no longer bring them a future, are the ones that are supposed to bring us a future. The firstborn, the leaders of the household. Where were they? And they were absent. They let the Ribbono Shalom down. So in the second month, 1 month after Hakamas HaMishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to count the Levim. And I'll tell you how many Bechorim. There's a count of the firstborn. And then there's a swap. They are no longer it. Welcome to the Levim. Then, this week's parasha, we go back and revisit that day. We're back now in the dedication ceremony day. And we've discussed, it was a very eventful day. There were 8 days of build-up, according to most commentaries, to Machloket, when the 8 days started. May it be it started on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, according to most. It ended on that day. And it ends, the 8th day concludes on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is the day the Mishkan is dedicated. The Nesiim come along and say, we want to be part of this. And we're going to see in one moment what it is that they bring. Nadav Avihu, they also brought something on that day. Hashem's going to love this one. I know Hashem loves this. Ketoret. We've never seen this before that Hashem loves. I know he's going to love it. And we know that it was a disaster, another calamity in Am Yisrael. Nadav Avihu died. Amidst the simcha, amidst the singing, dancing, the shira, the shechina, residing once again in Am Yisrael, Nadav Avihu died. The Nesiim come along and they say, you know, we have a fantastic gift for the Mishkan. What's their fantastic gift? Anyone know what the gift is that the Nesiim bring to the Mishkan? Karpano? Not at the beginning, actually. They brought wagons. Beautiful wagons. 12 Nesiim bring 6 wagons and 12 bull to carry the wagon, to draw the wagons. So each Nasi paid essentially for a bull and half the cost of a wagon. And the Nesiim brought these wagons and bulls to Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the purpose of bulls drawing wagons? Because the kelim of the Mishkan, now that we have a Mishkan, we have to get ready to move the Mishkan. We're going to be traveling in the desert on our way to Eretz Yisrael. And when you travel, it's very heavy. It's very hard to carry all these things. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Medrash says, it was a big miracle, a nace, that he was able to get the Mishkan up. He was looking. Each piece was bigger than he was. How am I going to lift these things? Silver and gold. It's very heavy. No way. So the Nesiim brought wagons. I've got a solution for you. Here you go. You just load the pieces into the wagon. Then you could draw. And we got bulls, very strong, mighty bulls. They'll draw it for you. It's easy. Beautiful. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he saw this gift of the Nesiim. And what did he do? He said, Kadosh Baruch Hu, what do I do with this? And Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, take it from them and give it to who are the ones that are going to carry the Mishkan parts? The Levim! Give it to the Levim! Which day is this? They're both saying, follow with, from the beginning to now. Which day is this that we're talking about when the Nesiim brought this gift? Where are we? The first of the month, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The day the Mishkan was established, the Nesiim bring a gift of wagons to help whoever is going to be carrying the Mishkan. And Hashem says, give it to the Levim. When did the Levim get replace the Bechorim, the firstborn? Next month. A month later. Why give it to the Levim? Who are they? You follow? Parshas Bamidbar is the second month. Parshas Naso is the first month. We go backwards. Why are they bringing wagons for the Levim? Or why does Moshe give it to the Levim if the firstborn are still the ones running the show? Not until next month do they get replaced. Yeah. I don't have a great answer. I'll tell you the truth. This was a good kasha, I think. It's a good kasha. It's disturbing to me that not a single person asks this question. None of them are freshmen. I looked. None of them had Russian. I don't know. That disturbs me even more. Maybe it's a klutz kasha. Somehow I misunderstood something. But I gave this to you, so that way it's a good introduction to understand a little bit of the background, what we're about to discuss. A contrast between Nadav Avihu and the Nesi'im. Because it's going to be really, really important. I'll tell you what I think the answer is, possible answer. They brought it. They didn't know to who, for whom. Moshe, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, give it to the Levim. When did that happen? Maybe that pasuk happened a month later. And the Torah just puts it together because it's part of the story. And we already know from the week before that it happens to be the Levim are already going to be the ones on the scene. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it basically foreshadows what will happen in a month from now. And it may have actually waited about a month to figure out who it was going to go to. Ravosai, Nadav Avihu tried to bring a carbon called Ketoret. It did not go well. The Nesi'im bring wagons. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, accept the wagons. Along with the wagons, you should tell the Nesi'im, as it says, Vayavihu Karbanam, they brought their carbon. What did they bring as their carbon? Wagons and bulls to draw the wagons. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let each Nasi have a day and karbanos on that day. And every single day, starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, for the next 12 days, a Nasi brings a carbon, a set of karbanos, a whole slew, a bull, a bunch of goats, sheep, lamb, v'chulei. Rabosai, each day is a yontif. That's the idea of a karban. When their karbanos, special karbanos brought, it means it's a yontif. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved them so much, he made a special yontif. Nachshon ben Aminadab, yontif for him, and all of Am Yisrael is now going to have a yontif for him. What happens if you have a chasan? We love a chasan. Chasan, come to Armenia, no tachanun, come, especially Monday. Start recruiting them. Chasan, it's his simcha, it's not my simcha. Oh, why is it that none of us say tachanun? Because of his simcha? It's just him. Wanya. But it spreads. I'm connected to a chasan. A simcha's chasan v'kala. I'm connected. We're part of Am Yisrael. He's an Armenian. We're all part of this simcha. Nachshon ben Aminadav. It's not even just a simcha's chasan. Stam in one community. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I want karbanos from him. And the next Nasi, and the next Nasi, and every single Nasi, I want a karban. Bunch of karbanos. Musaf is in their honor. One at a time. A separate yontif for each one of them. What's the difference between Nadav Avihu and the Nesi'im? And what do the Nesi'im bring? This is the best part. The main part of their karban is none other than Ketoret. Exactly what Nadav Avihu brought, which is a yontif, 12 days of yontif, Nadav Avihu got killed for it. The very same thing. Kaf achat asar zav mlea ketores parachad ben bakar. We lean it over and over and over and over again. Oh yeah, I know. It's just a different name at the end. Everybody knows how to lean those psukim. Kaf achat, one spoonful, asar zahav, weighing 10 golden pieces, mlea ketores, filled with ketores. That's what they brought. What's the difference? Nadav Avihu, they thought everything is great. We're so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the time to rise and shine. The glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out. Now, now's the time. We'll be in the limelight. It's amazing. It's going to be a great day. It's golden, it's grand, and we're right there, dead center. The Nesi'im had a very different approach. Number one, first, they did a survey. They spoke to each other. Hey, Nasi of Shimon, I have this idea. You want in? What do you think about this idea? Nasi of Levi, how about this? You like this idea? What do you think? Oh, yeah, it's a great idea. Nasi of Yehuda, what do you think about this? Oh, good idea. Let me in. Rabosai, we had I was involved in a certain yeshiva before Lev HaTorah got started. And Boaz and I already had gone back 5 years before as very, very close chaverim. We used to joke about the day that maybe we'll open a yeshiva together. We used to take notes, we would schmooze. And I was working for this other yeshiva. And Rav Boaz called me and said, Rav Miller said, start. Are you in? Now, Rav Boaz, I just started in this other yeshiva. I don't know what to do. Okay, yeah, I'm in. Sure, it took about 1 second. So, the person I was working for at the time was he was disturbed. He opened the yeshiva. And he had, he felt it was a well-rounded yeshiva. And Rav Boaz and I obviously must be stealing all of the wonderful ideas out there. So he called up Rav Boaz and he said, listen, you dare not take a single iota of our curriculum. To which Rav Boaz responded, first of all, education is our educational curriculum. I'll tell you the truth, we did not look at your curriculum at all. I don't even know what you're doing, meaning Rav Boaz. I did not give away what was going on over there. And we did not copy anything. However, let me just say something, Rav Boaz said back. I'm not sure educationally I agree with your approach. If you think you have MS, I want everybody to have MS. I think that our approach that we're going to open Lev HaTorah with is an MSistic approach. I want everybody in the world to copy me. This is what I'm hoping. We're going to have a lot of Talmidim, and all the Talmidim will copy it in their communities and worldwide and open schools and teach their family. They should, everybody should. I hope you copy what we're doing. There is a competition game that I play every now and then. Some of my chavrusas, which is at this point, Baruch Hashem, I think I got to the whole yeshiva. I really, really deeply apologize if I missed a few people. So I have pulot activities. Sometimes it's, you know, organized priorities. It's various things. So there's one game that I have. Very few this year I did this with. It's a competition game. Take two people. You're playing with each other. And everyone gets a pink piece of paper and a green piece of paper. Green and pink. This is because it dates from when I taught girls. So we got light green and light pink. And I give both this little green and little pink. Two people. At the count of three, you're going to each put out whichever piece you choose. You keep them behind your back so it doesn't show. You figure out. At the count of three, spit. And you go and you shoot. If you both get green, you both get 20 points. One of you gets green, and one of you gets pink. So then the one who gets green, loses 30 points. The one who gets pink gains 30 points. And if you both get pink, so then you both lose 20 points. And I've done this countless times. 1, 2, 3, shoot. 1, 2, 3, shoot. After about 10 rounds, including some rounds where I allow them to talk to each other. You know, why don't you talk before you shoot? And the number of lies that go on. Okay, that's part of the game of competition. Here's the one problem. When we get to the end of the game and nobody broke 100 because the entire time they're fighting, trying to compete, I point out to them, these wonderful competitors that I never actually said that the point of the game is to get more points than the other guy. And I never even said that the point is that you're playing against each other, and my instructions were you're playing with each other. And yet, there was an automatic, natural understanding, he is my prey, and I must defeat him. And in the business world, if I have a great idea, I'm not going to tell anybody, this is all mine. I'm going to make the billions of dollars. It's all mine. We're not going to share. My uncle is a dentist. He's a retired dentist at this point. He was a dentist in the Bell's Clinic, a very, very large clinic. And he pointed out that there was something remarkable he noticed amongst the male dentists and all the female nurses and secretaries. All the secretaries and nurses, they would share insights with one another. Oh, I've got a good insight on how to do this better. Oh, yeah, let me tell you this. And all the males, all the doctors, we male competitive individuals, decided, I've got a new idea. I'm going to be more successful than him. I'm never going to tell him. I got this edge. That's the chap of the Nisim. They decided, number one, first and foremost, someone thought of the idea. I don't know which one thought of the idea first. Maybe Nachshon ben Aminadav, after all, he's the first one in the list. Maybe he was the first one to jump into the Amsuf. Maybe it was him. Maybe not. We don't even know. The Torah doesn't tell us. They all came together. And who was the bright one who thought, whose brainchild was this? We have to know. Who's the Rosh Yeshiva here? Which one of these great Nasiim? Who's the head? Telling. I've got a great idea. And I share it with all the other Nasi. That's number one. Number two. Besides for the unity, what did they do as opposed to Nadav Aviyu? Nadav Aviyu, they go straight to the Mizbeach. Oh, the Ribbono Shel Olam's going to love this one. Watch this. And there is instantaneous combustion out of the wrong item. And what did the Nasiim do? They brought it to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, what do you think? What do you think of this? We'd love to give something special to the Mishkan, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Kvod HaShechina. We want to take part in this way. We think it's a good idea. What do you think? Humility. Humility and unity. The two greatest midos for which we got Torah, Matan Torah. We get to the Midbar, we get Torah. What happens in a desert? You're a nobody. So you unify with everybody else. You're in the desert. You're in the desert. We are tremendous. We're not nobodies. You know how we're tremendous? Because we're together. And why in a desert? Because you have to be humble. The Maharal, you have to be humble. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the desert to give us the Torah. So these two ideas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a yantif. He made a yantif. And this idea of a yantif, that it spreads out to the whole Am Yisrael, and it's a simcha for all of Am Yisrael, this is the point that I want to focus on. What does it mean that there's a yantif that spreads to Am Yisrael? And what does it mean that one person affects all of Am Yisrael? I opened the shul, and we talk about different aspects of the opening of the shul just about every week. And one of the things that I noticed is that when we opened, I had a little bit of a difficult time actually prior to it. The difficulty was that I moved to Ramat Beit Shemesh. And why is it that we chose Ramat Beit Shemesh? Because we were newlyweds, we were here in Eretz Yisrael. At our wedding, my wife got a job for the following year when we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. She goes to work, MMY. She taught there the first 7 years of its creation. And she came home one day, the first few months, first month or two, we're moving to Ramat Beit Shemesh. Why is that? Because all the people we look up to are moving to Ramat Beit Shemesh. Okay? Who are all the people we look up to? So she said names. I didn't know them. She was working with them. I didn't. But trust me, these are the people we look up to. Okay, so I trusted her. It's just a little decision. She leaves world peace to me. I get to make that decision. And I also got to choose my toothbrush this year. It was a very satisfying decision. I conveniently made it a different color than the rest. She goes back. I said, this Ramat Beit Shemesh, how many builders are there? She comes back home the next day. There are 3 builders in Ramat Beit Shemesh. There were 3 builders in Ramat Beit Shemesh the way there were all of 3 builders in the entire United States of America. But that's what we thought. Tough. So there are all of 3 builders, all these people that we look up to. Well, there were 3 of them, so each of them bought in a different project, and thus there are only 3 builders. So each of them gave us the name that they bought in, and we looked at their plans. We chose one of, there are only 3 builders. I bet it's a hilltop, beautiful little hilltop, about 100 families. We always wanted to be on a yeshuv, small, where everybody knows everyone, everyone gets along. This is fantastic. And we got here. We felt like the littlest people in the world. There were thousands of people. Thousands. When did this get here? Who did this? And I go to shul. First Shabbos I'm here. Friday night. I walked into shul. And I was there early. Great. So I sat down. And in the middle of Chazar Sashatz, the man whose seat it was walked into shul and said, "Excuse me, I'm sorry, but that's my seat. Sorry, could you show me where there is a seat that I could sit in?" I said, "No, I'm sorry, I can't. They're all taken." So, okay, so where should I stand? So, actually, the standing room, the aisle space is also taken. So where should I stand? Where should I go? If you stay right outside the door, just go outside, you could still hear at, that's the closest place I could tell you, but everything is taken. But kachava, within the next few minutes, everything filled up. They beat me to it. They made Aliyah or Ramat Beit Shemesh before I did, so I'm on the out. I was clearly the youngest person in the room as well, or I wasn't in the room, so that's okay. I was all of 24. At the time, we were the youngest couple, I think, at the time in Ramat Beit Shemesh. And I got home. I was very, very sad. Not a problem. I hear that there are options in Ramat Beit Shemesh. So I went to yet another shul the next morning. It was not a shul for me. It's a shul that reminded me of years of shuls that I ran away from. A lot of talking, a lot of disturbance. Not much serious tefillah. I could not be there. Went home. Beautiful house. We're moving back to Yerushalayim. Ramat Beit Shemesh, this is not for us. So we didn't decide we were going to move back to Yerushalayim. We decided instead we're going to actually build our own hilltop. And we were mamish that close. We collected a group of friends. I even got the hilltop. And we're mamish that close, ready to start a whole moshav of our own. And then something happened. Something changed, which is not relevant. But a friend of mine who I had learned in Kollel with, I was sitting in a base medrash in Ramat Beit Shemesh preparing shiurim, and this friend came over to me and said, "You want to build a shul together?" I was like, "Well, no, I want to move." He said, "But we have to build a shul together." It's like, "Why do we have to build a shul together? I'm moving out of here. Please, leave me alone." So he told me the following story, that he was in the very same shul that I got thrown out of, like put outside. And it wasn't malicious. They just didn't have room. They pushed it, didn't have room. I'm actually very close friends with a lot of the people there, a lot of the heads there. Nice people. And he decided that he wanted to make his, he had a baby girl, and he wanted to make a kiddush in the shul. He wanted to make a kiddush. He thought it would be very nice to make a kiddush for the whole community, all the congregants. And that way it'll feel like a nice, homey place. There's only one little itty-bitty problem. He didn't know Hebrew. He didn't know how to speak Hebrew. And it's time, you know, to kiddush. You have to speak. It's expected. So he gets up there, and he gives a speech. And in the first sentence, he says, I'm sorry to all the Israelis here, but I'm going to speak in English. And he gave a beautiful, beautiful drasha. It was all of, I don't know, 5 minutes long, 7 minutes long. I don't really remember. This goes back about only 12 years. And I was there for that speech. And the Israelis got very, very upset. How dare you? How dare you come to our show and run a kiddush in English? Who do you think you are? And he said, the Americans that make Aliyah, where do they go? Where could they go? They go to a Merkaz Klita. You probably never heard of this thing, but when I was a kid, you'd go and you make Aliyah. Family would make Aliyah. You'd go off to some forsaken place that to use a phone is like Kriyas Yamsuf. And you have no privacy. And it's like basically a home for a major homeless shelter, essentially. Oh, you're an Olé? Come, we have a beautiful place. And people were wonderful there. They were very kind, but you felt entirely displaced. So here, finally, a bunch of Americans can make Aliyah to a community and feel like they're parts of it, and they're thrown out. You are not wanted. No kiddush. We have to make a shul where Americans will feel welcome. Nikuda. You know, I said, that's a beautiful idea. I live in an apartment building where there's covered parking. Every 5 parking spaces is covered and can be used as a shul. And nobody in my building owns a car. It goes for waste. Every day I pass by. What a waste. What a waste. Every single day. I can't deal with it. The waste, it should be a shul. I've always thought it should be a shul, but I don't want to be in Ramat Beit Shemesh. But with this idea, I'm in with you. So we built a shul together, after which, about a month, he left back to Yerushalayim. Shkayef, thanks. I just thought, my in was, I thought it was so cool to finally utilize that space. I had no desire to build a shul. But he left, so then I was the president of the shul for 8 years. Baruch Hashem. Rabosai, I don't mean to take the credit for everything in the world and every single American that made Aliyah, but I will say that it was the first shul, English-speaking shul in Ramat Beit Shemesh. And because of that, Ramat Beit Shemesh became known as a center that deals and cares for Olim. Every shul started giving care packages to the Olim Chadashim that would come in the mid-year and summer points. It would be a big mass thing. Every shul was trying to find out, ooh, where are the new Olim? Let's bring them care packages. Let's set up meals for them. This was the center. My shul was the center of that. It was the starter of it. Not every Olim came to a Beis Tefillah. It's not for everybody. And Baruch Hashem, there are 60, 70 shuls in Ramat Beit Shemesh, so everybody could have their flavor. Beautiful. But one person can make a huge difference. My Chavrusa, it was his brainchild, he made a huge difference. Very, very big. How big? Well, how many Anglos are there in Ramat Beit Shemesh that feel that this is great? A lot. A few thousand. I've seen it in the reverse as well. One person speaks during davening. One person sleeps late and misses davening. One person bottles, wastes time from learning. The next guy, oh, he can and I can. One person deals weekly with his life, affects other people. And I want to give you the following idea to think about, because there's something very, very heavy that I realized this week. There are different schools of thought out there, and they're all wonderful, and we need all of them. There's the Haredi approach. There's the Dati Lumi approach. There's a modern Orthodox approach in America. There's a Sephardic approach, Taimani, Moroccan, Syrian, Lubavitch, every type of Hasidish. There's Kapishnitz, there's Pilsner, two names I've never heard until I moved here. Rabosai, I believe that our world, the world that I'm talking to here, by and large, comes from the modern Orthodox world. The modern Orthodox world has a tremendous amount to offer the world. It is not the camp that holds all the emes, and everybody else is wrong. Every camp has emes, and every camp has its pitfalls. But we've got a lot of good things. A lot. The concept that you could actually take education seriously. The idea that you could accept education from different facets and understand and utilize that information in your Torah learning. The idea that you could believe that dinosaurs actually existed and the bones weren't necessarily planted there just to test you. And you're not an apikoros, because you could figure out a way that it actually still does work, that you could still be a mammon. A way that you could be a working man and not just be religious partially Jewish style, like kosher style. You could actually be a massive Talmud Chacham. These are ideas that the modern Orthodox world has brought. You could live a prim and proper life. You can love Geula. You can love Eretz Yisrael. You can learn to deal with non-religious people, figure out how to love them as Yidden, and not care necessarily for their deeds that are not appropriate, and yet be machshiv the ones that are great. You could figure out how to splinter and divide these difficult, subtle concepts. That is if you belong to the modern Orthodox world. You could figure out 30 years ago that smoking is terrible for you. You could figure out a lot of wonderful things. You could figure out the math and science between hundreds of sugyas that people that are pivoted in another world may never, ever come to realize. And that's if you're educated. And today, Rabosai, they did a statistic. I don't mean today. In these days, a guy named Mr. Schiff, Dr. Schiff, he does a population statistic in the United States for the Orthodox Jewish growth. Every 3 years, he runs the statistic. 3 years ago was the last one, which means that this year he's coming out with the new stats. There was a 10% growth. Both, we spoke about this on Shabbos. There was a 10% growth over the past 10 years of the Jewish Orthodox population in the United States of America. There was a 10% growth. And a 10% growth of institutions, of schools, Jewish day schools in the United States of America. And every bit of that growth belongs to the yeshivish world in the United States of America. And 0% growth belongs to the modern Orthodox world. That's you and me. There is zero growth in that world. That means that the death rate and intermarriage rate and birth rate are all the same. And I am convinced, I'm sure of this, I'm not a Navi, but I know that when he comes out with the stats this year, I'm sure it will not show zero, it will show negative. Two major Jewish day schools, high schools closed this year, and there are at least another 20 that are struggling for survival. The recruiting this year, you've all heard, it was a little bit more difficult this year. It was more difficult for every single yeshiva. You know why? Because when Leiva Torah started, from the day we started, six more yeshivas opened up. And everyone was assuming there's no oppression in Am Yisrael in America. Orthodox population, I'm sure, will be growing. There are more schools, more students, so there'll be more to go around. And what happened? There are less. Because our world that we come from is not doing it. And that means that every single person here, every single person here, we started the year with a drasha, and I imagine you'll all remember it. And maybe now it can hit home a little bit deeper after a year. That how many people were there in Har Grizim and Har Evel? What's the difference? There are 400 plus ways of dividing 12 tribes into two. And the Ribbono Shel Olam divided it in a way that the numbers are identical. The only way that the numbers on this mountain and this mountain are almost identical. How many more were there on Har Evel than on Har Grizim? One. There was one more person standing on Har Evel than on Har Grizim. And who is that one person? Every single one of you. If you talk during davening, you are destroying the world, Rabosai. You are destroying the modern Orthodox world. We have an incredible amount to give the world. We're not the only MS out there. But we're decreasing. We are indeed an endangered species. And if you give in, well, there's the platform, and then there's in practice. And in practice, that's what I fit into. What we do. In practice, we're not Shomer Negiah. In practice, our wives don't cover their hair. In practice, we go to bars, we go doing whatever we want. We don't go to davening. We don't... Chas v'chalila, Rabosai. The platform of Soloveitchik. What he was the pioneer of this movement. Not for that. He saved hundreds of thousands of Yidden. I never met Rav Soloveitchik. But without him, I wouldn't be here. My father was not in his shir. He learned by Rav David Lifshitz, but had it not been for Rav Soloveitchik, I am sure I would not be here. And I'm sure just about none of you would be here either. What was his plight in life? Learn. Daven. Have secular studies. Fulfill your Torah. It didn't mean be modern. Oh yeah, and fill a little bit of good Jewish style on the side to make you feel better. We have a real need, a job. Every single person here has a job. If someone, one person sees you, ooh, he's davening. Wow, I'm going to daven. He came back from Israel and he's learning? What are we waiting for? What are you doing? Everyone has to be stark. We know what happens. We have a division. Those are the stark guys. I'm not. It's okay. I'll be the not stark guy because we have a conservation of energy. The overall plateau should be like this. If he's stark, I could be the one not stark, and overall we'll average. No. Every single person here has to be stark. There are 8,500 Talmidim in Hesder units today. 8,500. The whole Gantz Eretz Yisrael. 8,500. 5,400 soldiers from Hesder. The whole Hesder. That's it. So, finished. Either Chiloni or not serving. The whole army. Mechina. That's the way to go. So what's going on in Ruba de Ruba in the most majority of Mechina programs? It's Gevaldik. They have earrings, they have colored hair, and they have ripped jeans, they drink and smoke, and they go to the army the best they could be. Some of the guys end up being gevaldik. They're great, they're gems, just like I remember from my co-ed schools, there were also always gems, like 3-4 gems, miracles that would come out. But Mechina, that's the answer. Hesder, a boy that's serious, solid citizen. I want to take Torah seriously. And I want to serve Am Yisrael seriously. How many are left? There are 5,000 left in the whole country. Out of 5 years. This is the whole 5-year gap. I'm not talking about the first year entry student. That's it. And it's down. and going down and down and down. I just heard from Rav Yitzchak Steinberg that there's some of the major, most prominent Hasidic yeshivas have 3 guys, that one has 4 guys for the coming year. Where are they all going? Either not serious in Torah, or they're going off into other camps. Rav Osler, we have to be strong. We have to be strong. If you decide you want to jump into another camp, fine. Every camp has emes. That's an option. Fine. And the rest of us that are left here will be the ones to hold it up. But I believe that we have something to teach. And we have to teach it. We have to be strong. There's no room for being weak. And mamish, I cannot stress it enough. Wherever you go, whoever you are, and I know every single yid and neshama in this room, there is no neshama here, not one, that can say, I'm not cut out for it. I know every one of you is cut out for it. I'll end with a story, a precious, precious story that I think I said at one point in time, months and months ago, but it'll be my final story for the year, of a man who was a teacher, science teacher, and he gave out at the end of his first year of teaching to his students, he gave them seed pearls, and he said, you are like the seeds, you're all precious, and you're all capable of growing into wonderful, wonderful gems. One of the girls in the class, she took her seed pearl, as did many of the others, put it away. She then graduated and went into high school. In high school, she found a high school sweetheart, and she started to have a relationship with him. And lo and behold, by the time she was 15, she was pregnant with her first child. At that point, of course, they thought maybe they should get married. So they got married at 16, Kafava, and then she had a second child. At this point, he was working in the supermarket, not educated. She was working, trying to do something, but now there's a second child on the way. What could she do? And life was rolling with leaving them behind. And it was rolling and rolling and rolling. And then she came across this seed pearl in her drawer, and she said to herself, maybe that teacher was correct. That's the scary point. But so many of us think, I'm not cut out for it. Why? Because I decided that one day. Just like you decided that one day, you could decide the opposite the other day. Your mamish can. She ended up turning her life around. She ended up going back to school to learn how to be an English teacher. She became a teacher of the year. She received an award. She met up with that science teacher. She said, did you really believe in me? It was just sound like a nice, cute thing. Said, no, I got to know every single one of my students that year. And I could tell you, really, really did truly believe in every one of you. Rabosai, I'd like to quote this science teacher. I got to know every single one of you. Every one of you is special. Every one of you has got tremendous koach in there. Please, please, take this nakuda seriously. If somehow the whole year went by and you grew in many, many things, but you're thinking that come next year, come the summer, I'm not going to necessarily be able to really find how. The how is a big kasha. I can't do it. I can't merge it with my life. It doesn't fit. It doesn't shtim with my life. Think about Bein HaZmanim. Think about what you're going to do, how you can do it. Because I know every single one can. Mitzvah Hashem, I give a bracha to every single one of you. The bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu saw. Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the second luchos and his face lit up, and the Medrash asks, where did the light come from? The Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu grabbed the top 2 cubits, tefachim of the luchot. Moshe Rabbeinu grabbed the bottom 2, and the luchot were 6 tefachim tall. from the middle too, is where the glow came from. Avraham Lichtenstein came along and said, from a Kaddish Baruch Hu's power alone, you don't have light. From the human power alone, you don't have light. It's only from the merger of the two together do we have light. Mitzvah Hashem, if you try in your Moser Nefesh, Mitzvah Hashem, you too will bring forth that light. Let's have that synthesis. If you come back Shanabet, Gevaldik. Always come back Shanabet. I was Shana Gimel. How was I Shana Gimel? Because I was in Eretz Yisrael in my old yeshiva for one day of Shana Gimel. I was Shana Gimel. If you come back January, you're Shana Bet. You come back in May after your school is finished, you're Shana Bet. Come back Shana Bet, come back Shana Gimel, come back Shana Dalet. Whenever you come back all the time. Come back. Come back to learn. Come back to be here. Come back to recharge as much as you can. It's worth it. If you spend $10,000 on continuing to come back, and that was the best $10,000 you spent in your life. Keep coming back. Mitzvah Hashem, if you put yours in, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu come and show you that He's there with you, bringing out that light.